teacher and best-selling author Wally Lam got a call one day asking him to go to prison to take on a project. The caller wanted him to conduct one writing session with inmates at the York Correctional Institution for Women in Connecticut. That one session turned into 3 years, and the result is a new book of essays, Couldn't Keep It to Myself. Inmate stories in their own words.
At the time I was incarcerated, I sported my hair in long, bronze dreadlocks with honey blonde highlights. For some, dreads were worn as a political statement against oppression, but mine were about style, not substance. They completed my wild, thuggish look, baggy jeans, hoodie, and combat boots.
Billy was the almost jealous type, accusing me of sleeping with everyone from my 13-year-old next-door neighbor to my high school math teacher. He was wrong about the neighbor. I even managed to seduce my father's airplane mechanic. Was his name Chris? Rob? It was hard to keep them straight. Girls at school began to snicker. Their angry ones met me face to face. Were you with my boyfriend last weekend? Sometimes I'd respond.
Pope John Paul has proclaimed 2000 the year of the Great Jubilee. And so we celebrate this first day of the new millennium in our makeshift church, the wide-open hallway of Industrial Building Number 9. We of the Maximum Security West Side of York CI gather each week in a corridor with white steel beams, raw cinder block walls, a concrete floor painted battleship gray, and shatterproof windows that look onto the loading docks. Standing at the podium, I adjust the microphone and welcome the 200 women who have gathered.
That's Robin Cullen. Before that, we heard Tabitha Rowley and Nancy Whiteley. Most of the women who showed up to Wally Lam's writing session only wanted to meet the man they'd seen on Oprah Winfrey's talk show. He says the novelty of his celebrity eventually wore off when one woman raised her hand and offered to read her work aloud.
I remembered her from the very first session, and she had sat there the whole time scowling at me with her fists clenched and her eyes going back and forth as I walked around the room. She clearly was giving messages that she didn't trust me. I was surprised when she showed up for the second session. She had writing with her, but she approached me before the class began, and she said, "Now, you're not going to read anything of mine aloud, are you?" And I said, "No, not unless you want me to do that. You're in control of that." I noticed that she had written in a pen name. Her actual name was Diane, but she was signing her work Natasha. And so I was shocked at the end of the third session when we were just sort of closing up shop and her hand went up. It was trembling. And she said, "Do you mind if I read what I wrote?" And I said, "Yeah, go ahead." And she proceeded to read a two-page, very disjointed summary of her really horrific life story. Some really very sad stuff had happened to her, and she had done some terrible things as well. But that was the turning point, I think, because if Diane could do this, take this risk, suddenly everybody was able to do that. And that's when I began to see some really dramatic changes in the writing.
So when the student raised her hand and wanted to share her story, it sounds like she couldn't keep her writing to herself. And that's interesting because that's also the title of the book. Couldn't Keep It to Myself. Where's that title come from?
It comes from a gospel song, actually. And, you know, on my very first trip to York for that one time only, as I had thought, 90-minute session, I was flipping the radio buttons back and forth, and suddenly over the airwaves, there was a gospel song. The song is "Said I Wasn't Gonna Tell Nobody," and it has the line, "But I couldn't keep it to myself." I had pulled over to the side of the road when I heard that song, and then I looked up, and on Interstate 95, there posted right near the Niantic prison was a sign that said, "Correctional facility area, do not stop." So I was doing the workshops for about a year or so, and that's when we began to think in terms of a book, certainly not a published book, but something that we were going to publish in-house. I was going to do a desktop publishing treatment of it so that the women could have stories to give to their families, and we were going to put some in the prison library. And we began to talk about titles. Well, what should we call this? Somebody said to me, "Well, what are you going to call your next novel, Wally?" And I'd been telling them that I'd been working on a story and sharing some of the passages with them. And I said, "Well, I thought I would call it Couldn't Keep It to Myself, and it's based on this gospel song that I heard the first time I came down here." And one of our writers, Tabitha Rowley, said, "Oh, I know that song." And somebody said, "Well, sing it." And she just started belting it out. And it was an a cappella version, but it packed all the vocal thunder of the version that I had heard on the radio. And so that was it. I said, okay, I give up. This is the perfect title for your collection.
Were there common themes throughout the book, throughout these stories? Fear, regret, anger, contrition?
Yeah, yes. Certainly a lot of that. A lot of the women did some very heavy-duty work when they began to write about things like their experiences with incest and domestic violence. And the majority of the women, unfortunately, had been victims. And they were able to use that writing to finally say it, to finally state it. And I think in many cases, it has ceased or at least lessened to have such power over them.
You mentioned that a lot of the women were victims. Unfortunately, some of the victims' rights advocates are uncomfortable with this book, and not just the notion that that you or these women might profit monetarily, but that these women are experiencing a certain amount of notoriety or even fame.
You know, first of all, I think that the response has been an angry response, pretty much. You know, these women have no right, given where they were and who they are and what they've done, to record their lives, to share it with other people, and to be published in a book. And I think beneath the anger of that response is a very deep pain. It's the pain of loss and that sort of unfathomable grief that goes with it. And I can understand that. I appreciate that. But that said, the students that I work with are trying to heal. They're trying to get better. They're trying to get some self-awareness. They're reflecting on what's happened, why they're in the place that they are, and they want to learn from it and then get on with it. In my own opinion, I don't think that that dishonors victims or their families. I feel more than I've ever felt before that this does not have to be a polarizing book, that understanding and education and reconciliation is something that we all need.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle. My pleasure.
Wally Lam is the editor of Couldn't Keep It to Myself, Testimonies from Our Imprisoned Sisters by the Women of the York Correctional Institution. The publication of this book has landed the women back in court. This month, the state of Connecticut filed a lawsuit against the authors to recover the cost of their imprisonment. A 1995 law allows the state to charge prisoners when they're able to pay. The state says incarceration costs more than $100 a day. Wally Lam says the women are making very little money from the book.